This is Cruise Radio.
I cruise a lot, and I always sail with travel insurance. You should, too. Get a free quote today at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio. Very happy to have you here, my friend. On this week's show, a review of Carnival Cruise Line's newest megaship, Carnival Jubilee, and staff writer Richard Sims waiting in the wings with Cruise News. Jumping to him now. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Doug.
We start with news of a tragic accident at a popular cruise port.
Yeah, that's right, Doug. It sounds so cliche to say, but a dream vacation turned into a nightmare for a couple who'd sailed the Carnival Miracle to Hawaii. They arrived in the port of Honolulu and they were going to go shopping. So they were going to take one of those shuttle buses to go to a shopping area. The shuttle bus they were supposed to board ended up plowing into a group of people. Several guests were injured, but it was a 68-year-old woman from Illinois who was traveling with her husband and some friends and family on the Miracle to celebrate their anniversary. And she is the person who lost her life, sadly, here. It sounds as if the bus driver had gotten out of his seat, you know, whether to collect fares or for whatever reason, thought the bus was in park, was braked, but it wasn't. It was moving. Someone told him, you know, hey, the bus is moving, and he jumped back into the seat. And then it sounds as if when he went to put his foot on the brake, he actually hit the gas instead. And that's how he wound up hitting the various pedestrians. The woman's husband was injured as well, but he's expected to make a full recovery. It's such a sad story is, you know, this woman, I mean, it would be sad under any circumstances, but it's especially sad because this woman had dreamed her entire life of going to Hawaii, and she finally went on this anniversary trip, and it takes this awful, tragic turn.
Unreal. And the search for a missing crew member has been called off.
This is another man overboard story with, as is so often the case, a sad ending. This time it was a crew member on the Holland American ship Rotterdam. And video footage indicates that he jumped overboard purposefully. After the ship returned to Florida, he was reported missing, presumably by his co-workers, and a search started. But after searching a 538-square-mile area, the Coast Guard called things off. There's no word on what position the crew member held, but you have to feel sorry for the rest of the team who find themselves having to deal with the loss of their friend and co-worker. Because of the timing of everything, the next voyage was not impacted at all. And the Rotterdam is now on a 2-week repositioning cruise to the city, which after which it was named the Rotterdam.
So we have an update on a passenger who's been missing for about 15 days now.
Yeah, I don't know that this is surprising, but it is sad. We reported last week on a man named Brad Solomon, who'd gone missing after disembarking from Icon of the Seas in Cozumel, Mexico. We now know a little bit more about how things seem to have played out there. It seems that he and his wife disembarked at the port, and they each went to the restroom. You know, the way people do. They're like, okay, I'll meet you back out here. When he came out of the restroom and she was not there, presumably she was, you know, still in the ladies' room, the man who suffers from dementia went off looking for her. And according to his family members, when he is distressed or upset, he tends to move at a much quicker pace than normal. So he probably pretty quickly was able to like get lost in the crowd in Cozumel. There's been a massive search underway for him ever since. It's focused on the area around the port and then expanded outwards. Unfortunately, the efforts have been transitioned from search and rescue to search and recovery, as it's kind of assumed that after this much time has passed, he is probably deceased. We hope that he's eventually found, whether dead or alive, so that the family can have some form of closure, because, you know, otherwise you never know. And that's the hardest thing, is not knowing what happened to somebody. So however this is going to resolve, we will, you know, when there's an update to be given, we will give it. You know, now it's just a matter of, God willing, there being an update.
I've been talking back and forth with his daughter, Savannah, and over the weekend, she was telling me that she's back in the States now, and that it returned to recovery, basically, instead of search. But I can't even imagine, just so many questions unanswered. And they're still remaining optimistic, but as every day goes by, it's just, you know.
So sad.
Elsewhere, Carnival Cruise Line is publicly shaming some passengers for bad behavior.
You know, there are always going to be people who take advantage of a situation. You give them an inch and they take the proverbial mile. In this case, Carnival's brand ambassador, John Heald, who has who is kind of the public face of the company. So for Diamond and Platinum guests, one of the benefits their loyalty earns them is the ability to, you know, once they get on board, they can go to their room and drop off their luggage in the stateroom. This may not seem like a big deal, but as someone who has gotten on board with, you know, maybe you have more in your backpack than you thought, you don't want to lug that thing around until the staterooms are ready at 1:30. So it's a nice perk to be able to go and drop your stuff off. This is also part of the Faster to the Fun privilege or package. So you can either earn this perk with your Diamond and Platinum status or by purchasing Faster to the Fun. So anyway, like I said, it's a nice little perk to have. But here's the rub. There are a lot of people who go to their room, drop off their stuff, and then instead of leaving, which they're supposed to do until the staterooms are fully ready, they decide to stick around. Maybe they curl up and take a nap. Maybe they start unpacking. Maybe they get in the shower, whatever. But, you know, this is not only unfair to the people who are playing by the rules, but it's a big problem for stateroom attendants because, remember, they only have a few hours. And it's easy not to process this, but they only have a few hours between when the ship arrives and everybody gets off and when the next group of passengers come in and they want to move into their rooms. It's not like a hotel where, you know, all of the guests in a hotel don't check out at the same time. They come down, you know, maybe some today, some tomorrow, some next week. Whereas on a ship, when the ship arrives, everybody gets off and there's this mad scramble to get all the supplies back on board, get all the staterooms turned over, get all the sheets changed, get all the bathrooms washed, the whole nine yards. So it's really unfair to the staff who's working so hard that they go to clean a room and, oh, the people are there and they don't want to leave. As Heald's post said, as someone in the responses to his post said, it's a few bad apples who ruin it for everything, because if this kind of thing starts to interfere or continues to interfere with the crew's ability to get their job done, there's no saying that Carnival can't, the next time they revamp their VIP program, which they're in the process of doing right now, there's no saying that they won't say, you know what, this perk is more trouble than it's worth. So we're just going to take it away. Everybody's going to have to keep their bags with them until the rooms are ready, because we just can't trust y'all who have the perk to go in, drop your bags, and leave. If you're one of the people who has this perk, please be aware of why it's important that you do follow the rule and drop your stuff and go. You know, that's pretty simple.
What you compared it to is actually interesting, right? Because, okay, so a Fantasy class ship has just over 1,000 staterooms, and the new Excel class ships like Jubilee have over 2,200 rooms. So if you think about it, that's like, I don't know, the Strat maybe in Vegas or the Gold Nugget, they all have like 2,000 or so hotel rooms. But yeah, it's a weird comparison thinking how they actually turn it over. Like you said, not everyone will leave a hotel in one day, like not 2,000 rooms, but it happens every week on a ship, every few days. And how they manage to do that is beyond me, mind-blowing. And we're going to wrap things up today with a story that is both near and dear to our hearts because it involves food.
I mean, frankly, I don't trust anyone who says food isn't a big part of cruising. Who are these freaks? But in any case, this particular story involves Norwegian Cruise Line and their Prima class ships. We've talked before about the fact that within a class of ships, there's not generally a whole lot of change from ship to ship, especially where things like layouts are concerned. Because by the time, you know, maybe they decide, oh, wow, that was a really decision to put that there. By the time they realize that on, say, Prima, the first ship in the class, they're already designing like the third, fourth, or fifth ship in the class. So there's not a lot of wiggle room from a design perspective. But one thing most cruise lines do try to do is roll out a new concept. But you can put something new in a space that was occupied by something else on a previous ship. That is what they're doing with the third class in the Prima, which is Aqua or Agua, depending on how you want to pronounce it. This ship will feature a Thai restaurant, which is the first for them. And there's not actually a lot of Thai restaurants that I'm aware of on many cruise lines. It's going to be called, and I know I will butcher this, but Sukhothai. That's what I'm going with. Sukhothai. And it'll feature both traditional Thai dishes and some modern twists on classic Thai dishes. It sounds really amazing. We don't have a huge number of details about it. We've seen some renderings of the decor, which is beautiful, very lots of curves, lots of swirls. It's going to be a really, really pretty space. Now, they've said that the venue is going to be located on Deck 17. They haven't gotten more specific than that. But when you look at the layout, I'm guessing it will either replace Palomar or Food Republic. Those are the two spaces on 17 that seem, you know, kind of like the best place for it to fit. If I had to guess, I'm going to say that it's going to replace Food Republic, because Food Republic focuses on sort of Asian fusion dishes. So if you're going to put a Thai restaurant in, that would make more sense to replace that than Palomar, which is sort of a Mediterranean seafood restaurant. So that's my guess. But one thing that's missing on a lot of cruise ships within all of the lines is vegetarian food. You know, usually in the main dining room at night, they'll have one option. You know, there might be something on the buffet, but within the Indulge Food Hall, they're going to have an entirely new restaurant called, and again, I'm probably going to butcher this, but it looks like Plantery, P-L-A-N-T-E-R-I-E, Plantery. And it's going to involve plant-based bowls and other healthy options for those who are vegetarian or vegan, or, you know, maybe they're just looking to eat healthier during their cruise. Again, I don't know who those people are, but hey, good for them. They have more choices now. We'll find out eventually when the ship is rolled out. Just about a year from now, in April of 2025.
I can't wait. About a two-hour drive from Jacksonville here down to Port Canaveral. It's funny because you were talking about the Thai restaurant and trying to pronounce it, which I'm not even going to try to do, but it was on my copy this morning for the prompter for the news briefs. And I was like, you know what? We're just going to say Thai restaurant.
Yeah, between the two of us, if there's a name we can't butcher, we haven't found it yet.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, staff writer Richard Sims, as always, thank you, my friend. Have a good week.
As always, glad to be here.
Have a question or a comment for the show?
Yeah!
Send an email or voice memo to Doug at cruiseradio.net.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer, if you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
The world is constantly changing. Your place for news is still the same. Online and on demand at cruiseradio.net.
Bahar and his son just returned from a 7-night Western Caribbean cruise aboard Carnival Jubilee, and he joins us on the line to talk all about it. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Doug. It's great to be back and do another cruise review with you.
Yeah, happy to have you here. It's been a while. So I don't know much about Texas. You're in Austin, though. I do know that. And you had to get down to Galveston. Is that a come in the day of kind of trip, or do you come in early and do a pre-cruise stay?
So it depends. Some people just get in there. It's about a 3 to 4 hour drive, okay, depending on how bad the traffic in Houston. Once you get into Houston, we always just like to drive in the night before, the day before, just to kind of relax and have a nice easy embarkation the next morning.
I hear you. Now, give me some pre-cruise thoughts. What made you want to take this 7-nighter on Jubilee?
Well, it's obviously Jubilee's here in Galveston. Having done both Mardi Gras and Celebration, we enjoyed those ships. And so I figured Jubilee here. And also I wanted to, I cruise with my family, but my wife and my daughter couldn't join us for this trip. So we just made it a boys trip. Basically, it was just me and my 8-year-old son. And I'm really glad that we did, because we really had a blast together.
All right. So you make your way down to Galveston. It's time to board Carnival Jubilee. You're at Terminal 25. How was your embarkation?
It was actually very smooth. So we had the 10 to 10:30 check-in time, got there around 10 o'clock or maybe a couple minutes after 10. They saw our boarding passes, directed us to the Platinum and Diamond line. Really, there was no line. We just never really stopped walking. We just kept walking, got to the counter, did our passport checks, and then headed up the, once that was done, headed up some sort of a ramp and found ourselves in the captain's lounge, just an area basically where all the waiting area for the priority stuff, priority people, basically just the platinum and diamonds. And then it was really just like about 15 minutes from curb to that captain's lounge, about a half an hour wait there. And then we were basically on board a couple minutes before 11 o'clock.
As you mentioned, you've been on other XL class ships, and we sailed Celebration together about a year and a half ago. So what were your impressions when you walked on board Jubilee?
It's a beautiful ship. And like you said, I've done both Mardi Gras Celebration and it's basically the same class. I mean, the ship is stunning. The ship is new, still even smells new. I knew kind of what to expect coming in. Yeah, I mean, we were impressed. We knew what to expect. You get in and on, and I think on deck six mid, right at the Grand Central where the center stage is. There's a crew welcoming you there. There's a DJ that's playing on the center stage. So really, it was a great first impression.
What kind of stateroom did you book for this cruise, and what were your impressions of it throughout the week?
Yeah, we had an interior cabin, and we kind of love the location. I booked it like 16 forward, basically just a few steps from where the street eats is. Interior cabin was totally fine for the two of us. There's plenty of storage space. The bathroom was small, just like pretty much Celebration and Mardi Gras. I do like the glass shower door instead of that cold shower curtain. So yeah, I mean, no complaints with the cabin, and being on 16 forward, I think it was a great location for us. Just literally just a couple of steps from Lido Deck.
Was it fairly quiet if you're talking about left to right or up or down from your cabin?
Yes, especially being in the interior, it's not like we were worrying about any kind of noise from the balcony if they're playing like a mega deck party or anything like that. So really, once we were in, even in the hallway was pretty quiet. And then once we're in the cabin, we really didn't hear anything. There was a couple of times when it was super, super loud outside. We'd hear maybe a few, people outside our cabin, but it didn't really bother us at all. Like, I think overall, it was a good place to be.
Let's talk about some dining options, which there are a lot of them, over 20 here on board Carnival Jubilee. So we'll start at the buffet area, the Lido Marketplace area, and then we'll go out from there. So what was your impressions at Lido? How were the crowds on your sailing there and the quality of the food?
Yeah, Lido Marketplace, the buffet, the marketplace, really no complaints there. They have multiple stations, multiple islands. And I mean, I felt the food was pretty good for buffet food. I do like how they have some extra food options even there, like the shawarma, the gelato place, which is also free. There's also hot dogs. There's also plenty of seating area. So I kind of like that on both sides, both port and starboard side. I kind of like that versus some of the older or other Carnival ships where, you sometimes struggle to find some seating area in peak times.
Outside of the Lido area, you have like the Guy's Burger joint, the pizza, the chicken. Give us the rundown.
Okay. So Guy's Burger, you'll find that on 17 port side. I don't actually remember eating there on this particular sailing. There's just so many other options, but we did hit up. There's an ice cream machine right there right in front of Guy's there. So we definitely hit that up several times. Street Eats, like I said, that was just literally right outside our cabin. Absolutely delicious. They have like three stations. There's they're called Time Fries and Dumpling Place. And then the last station at the end on closer to the, like on the starboard side, we had some like Moroccan beef the one day. And it's just, everything was so good there. Blue Iguana Cantina, that obviously never disappoints for breakfast or lunch. Big Chicken, of course, is a big hit, 16 aft. Those chicken sandwiches are really, really good. We didn't get to do Fresh Creation, so you'll see that on, there's like a salad bar on 16 forward. It's really only open on sea days, only for a couple of hours or so, a few hours. Did have it on Celebration. It was really good, so I expect the same here. And then going down to deck eight, there's a pizza place called Coastal Slice. That was pretty good. Typically, there's a line there, and it moves fairly quickly. At one point we were actually just finished lunch or dinner or something. We weren't even planning on eating anything, but as walking there, I didn't even see, it was like zero people in the over there by the pizza. And I'm like, this is really strange. So I just stood there to just grab a pizza. Anyway, we also ate in Shebang and Kuchina. So those are on two different nights. Those are free. Both the service and the food were actually very, really, really good. Actually, better than I remembered from both Mardi Gras and Celebration. And actually, they were actually good enough that I ended up talking just to the waiters, manager, and the officers, and actually letting them know. I just want to also mention that both Kachina and Shebang. I know on other, like, I think on Mardi Gras and Celebration as well, I believe if you go like the second night, they will charge you like an $8 per person. But I did talk to the hostess, the restaurant hostess there, and that does not apply on Jubilee, at least as of right now. They didn't really give me a date or anything, but they said they're probably going to be free. Like, you can basically come as many times as you want and without any charge. And lastly, oh, I can't forget, Guy's Pig and Anchor Smokehouse. So we had that for dinner one night as well. That was also really good. I had the 3-meat plate. I think it was like brisket, dark chicken, pulled pork, couple of sides. I did want to have some ribs, but there was an upcharge for that. There were so many other options that were free, so it wasn't really a big deal.
A lot to unpack there. Let's transition to the main dining room. How was there? It's always a mixed bag with that place. You know, sometimes you'll say your table's ready and you go down there and you're still waiting another 45 minutes. Sometimes it'll say your table's ready in 20 minutes and you get the notification saying your table's ready now. How was the technology working with the flow of the main dining room?
Both, actually, the main dining room and also Chibang and Kuchina, the estimated time was always longer than we actually ended up finding it. So we did eat in the dining room once or twice. And I think I remember something like it said it was like a 20 or 30 minute wait, and it ended up being 10 minutes or even less. Service as well in the dining room, I was actually pretty impressed. The one or two nights that we went there, I think it was one night. It was super quick. I mean, I think we were in and out within an hour, which I was pretty surprised. And it wasn't even that the restaurant was empty. They even had us go to an overflow going to the other main dining room because they were just had too many people. I think it was the second elegant night. So it was the lobster night. So I wanted to get those lobsters. So, but even then, like I said, the service was really quick and I was pretty impressed.
For lobster night, is Carnival now charging for additional lobsters after the first one, or can you get two on the house and you pay?
I got two and I was not charged.
Okay.
Seems like they're not. Maybe once you get three or more, possibly.
Maybe that was it. I heard some pushback on it, but I mean, you know, you read so much stuff online, yeah. You don't know what to believe and what not to believe. So good to hear it from you that you got two and not, you didn't get charged there. I want to back up just for a moment here because I want to ask you about Baked Chicken. We talk about the place a lot on the show, but we don't really get details about it. So give us the rundown. You said it was on deck 16. Like, where exactly? How was the food, the menu, all that?
Yeah. So Baked Chicken is on 16 aft, and you can't miss it. I mean, there's actually, it's pretty popular to the point where there's typically a line. The line moves pretty quickly. They have lots of options, food options. I don't have the menu in front of me, but there was at least maybe four or five different types of sandwiches. It's pretty much the same chicken, and then it's all the different toppings that they'll add and sauces. There's also an option where you don't even have to get a chicken at all. You can just get the chicken, like almost like chicken tenders on their own. And then they'll add fries, and their fries are different than the Guy's fries. They're basically like skinnier, different, like I said, than Guy's, but still really good. So, and it's very fulfilling. But even my son, which he can be a little bit picky sometimes, but he loved it. I mean, both the chicken and the fries as well. So it was a hit.
Over the past few months, Carnival has increased their price, notched it up a little bit for the steakhouse and the teppanyaki. I know you dined at both of them. Is the quality still there as it was when you were on Celebration?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I think so. Yeah, the teppanyaki was a great experience. There was a lot of food from the appetizers, the entrees that you're selecting, and the quality of the food was still very good. I think it was worth it. The steakhouse, we did it on the last night of the cruise. I got the cowboy steak, which I had no complaints on, the lobster bisque for the appetizer, potatoes with all the fixings, the cheesecake. I mean, I was pretty much rolling out of there.
Aside from Carnival's latest price increase at the teppanyaki restaurant, is the menu the same as it was for you on Celebration?
It was the filet mignon on its own, or you can have the, I think it's like a filet mignon / lobster, filet mignon / salmon or chicken, so, or some sort of combinations of both. Most people in our table ended up getting the filet mignon on its own. My son got, which I did as well, my son got the filet mignon and the salmon because he loves salmon, and I tried it as well. It was like a teriyaki salmon, and it was very good.
Do you do much teppanyaki on land?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Gotcha. I think the value on board, just the pricing and everything just kind of spoiled us. And
yeah,
I look at them, the prices on land, I'm like, I'll just wait until the next Carnival ship or any cruise line.
Yeah, Benihana's will set you back a couple hundred bucks, or if not more these days for a family of four, right?
Yep.
So that you also had a chance to do something that not a lot of folks talk about when they come on and give Carnival reviews, and that's the Carnival Kitchen. What kind of class did you do, and what kind of cost was associated with that, and was it fun?
Yeah, it was. We did the ice cream one, and if I remember the price right, on top of my head, I want to say around $40, $35 to $40 maybe per person. We loved it. I mean, it was a great experience. They make it super simple for you. They pretty much get all the ingredients ready. They'll have it in like these little bowls in the right, of course, right quantity. So you don't have to do any of the, you know, the legwork of preparing all your ingredients and chopping them and weighing them and all. They get all that stuff done. And then they'll have the pots and pans ready to go. They'll have a tablet. And of course, you're watching like right in front of you is a chef, and he's doing it, and you're pretty much copying, like following what he's doing. And there are crew that are walking around to help you if you get stuck or have a question or do something wrong or anything like that. So it was a blast. And obviously after you make it, you end up eating what you did. So we did both. Even though it was labeled as just ice cream, we actually made that. And also we made the Banana Foster crepes as well from scratch, which was just super fun and delicious.
Yeah, sounds like a neat class there. Let's talk about the entertainment on board Carnival Jubilee. How was it throughout the week? Because they've been getting some dings on the space just being way too packed.
So I'm a huge comedy fan, especially the adult comedy. So that part didn't disappoint at all. I think we had about maybe five or six different comedians throughout the ship, or throughout the cruise. My only negative criticism there is the same comedian would pretty much do the same show in the same night, but we'll change it up in different nights, if that makes any sense. So you pretty much, if you're seeing one show for that comedian, there's no point in going seeing the other shows for that night. And then as far as the show, and they did some of those shows, most of them were done in, or maybe 2/3 or 3/4 of them were done in the Punchliner Comedy Club, but they did have some of them also in the main theater, the Jubilee Theater as well, including like the late night comedies, which would be done at like 11:30 p.m., for example. And then there's the production shows. I'm usually typically not a huge fan of those production choreographed shows, but I did go to the Celestial Strings. That's pretty much the only one that I would go to and I would somewhat enjoy. Then of course there's the other ones like Love and Marriage show. That's always entertaining. Oh, they had the Family Feuds. That's super fun to watch. And especially we ended up seeing the same family. We became so sort of friends with them. They were on the same Cozumel and Roatan port excursions with us on the same minibus, and we did the excursion together and everything. And actually seeing them on stage was pretty cool. And they ended up winning the fast money and the $500 onboard credit. So that was super, we were super happy for them. And then they have the other, the other entertainments like the 80s rock and glow party. That was great. We kind of prepared ourselves for that. We ended up going with like these like full blown 80s costume head to toe with a crazy wig and everything. So that was a great time.
As far as the casino area, I know you're traveling with your son, but did you walk through there and notice the smoke situation at all?
Yeah, so it's divided into a smoking and non-smoking section, and I feel like it really does work. And I just pretty much I'm not really a casino player. I did use the $25 that they give for the perk, and I just use it on the non-smoking side, and I really didn't smell any smoke at all. So I think whatever they're doing with that segregation between the two, it's working.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice wind curtain there, I think. And how was the ship, of course? This is a mega ship that holds like 6,500 people at full capacity. It does have six zones, but with that said, how was it with crowds and congestion throughout your sea days?
Yeah, so we were definitely sailing at full capacity, and I got the exact guest count. It was 6,347 for guests, and there was a little bit over 1,734 crew. So overall, between the two, is over a little bit over 8,000. It definitely felt crowded in certain areas, especially on sea days and like the Lido deck area. Like as far as the entertainment stuff, like trying to find a seat, center stage, Punchliner Comedy Club, depending on your group size, you know, if you're, you know, a group of, let's say, four or more people, you definitely want to be there at least 15 minutes early or so to be able to sit together. For the two of us, it really wasn't a huge deal. We would kind of sneak in about 5 minutes early. If he's in if he's in camp and I'm just going myself and maybe meeting up with someone, I can just, you know, I usually just come in a few minutes before and it's not a problem. Like I said, the pizza station, that one always had a line. The buffet area really wasn't that bad. Like I mentioned earlier, Big Chicken always had a line. But like I said, even when you just see a line, it wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna be waiting here for a good 30 minutes, 45 minutes, something like that. It's really not that bad.
You were traveling with your younger son. Does he spend much time in the kids' club?
Yeah, he did. Well, he did in the evenings, usually after dinner time until, well, it's free basically up until 10 o'clock. After that is night owls. I did let him enjoy night owls even on several nights up until late midnight or even past that a little bit. They close at 1 o'clock, especially if the next day is a sea day. He did also sometimes during the day as well, but we did want to hang out a lot together also on board, which we did, including, you know, doing the water slides and bolt and everything else. It's pretty similar to what we saw in the celebration, but yeah, I mean, my son had no complaints in the kids club at all.
Let's talk about the excursions you did and your ports of call on this 7-night cruise. There were 3 of them. So what we'll do here is give us the first one, give us your highlight, then we can just move to the next one.
Okay, so our first one was Cozumel. We actually never stepped foot on Cozumel. We did an excursion that we just basically boarded a boat straight off the ship and took us to the mainland. And it was basically like a 3-part. The first part was awesome. We swam in a cenote cavern with all these like caves and stalagmites, and we're squeezing through these like dark caves, and it was kind of a really unique experience. Then from there we headed over to another place in the mainland where we did some snorkeling, saw a couple of sea turtles and stingrays. For that part, it really honestly wasn't really a great experience for us. We've had better snorkeling elsewhere. Then the third part, we went over to a beach and had lunch there, and it was great Mexican like food, and the beach was great. And then boarded the boat back straight to the ship again without really hitting the port area, like without walking on the pier or anything.
I don't care who you are, that water is freezing in those caves.
Yes, I totally agree. And that reminds me, on the minibus as we were going there, someone asked, I asked the guide, I was like, how cold is the water? And he somewhat smiled and he said, it's refreshing. And then I immediately smiled and immediately knew what he meant. And my son's like, oh, great. That's going to be great. I'm like, yeah, well, we will find out soon enough. But yeah, it was pretty cold.
I did that exact excursion about a year ago, and it was very cool, both literally and figuratively. Yeah. What was your next port of call?
It was the Costa Maya. We did the bamboo rafting excursion. The only real downside there is it's a long bus ride, maybe about an hour to an hour and a half long. They took us to a place called, I think it's called Laguna de Bacalars, which translates to like Lake of Seven Colors. You're on these rafts, basically on this lagoon. The rafts are actually, fun fact, they're not actually really bamboo rafts. They just look like it because they're just PVC pipes painted bamboo, essentially. But that was nice. You kind of jump off the raft and you're basically in like this waist or chest deep of water, and it's just gorgeous, the whole area. And then a Mexican lunch there that's included, and then obviously the long bus ride back.
You mentioned Cozumel first. I thought they would go further south first, then work their way back up. They don't do that?
No, at least for this sailing. Yeah, that was our order. It was Cozumel first, then Costa Maya, then Roatan. But yeah, you're right. Typically, I've experienced the other way around.
Yeah, and then your last port was Mahogany Bay. What did y'all do there?
Did the ultimate adventure combo. Basically, it's like a 2-part ziplining. At the end, we did this like nature walk over these suspension bridges. So the ziplining part obviously was fun. It was like something like 12 ziplines, longest one being a little bit over 1,000 feet long. The really cool part of it was after we did that, we did the Superman style zipline. They basically like strap you in, you're laying flat or like horizontal facing forward, and then you're just like flying as if you're Superman. It was super cool.
Did you get any like GoPro footage of that or anything?
No, I didn't, but I did have my camera with me because I have pockets that are zippered pockets. So I managed to take some footage of my son as he was like, if I go first, I would see my son as he's coming, or I'd give my camera to like, you know, if I made friends with the people behind us or that group that I was talking about earlier, and they would take a footage of us leaving. So I did cut plenty of pictures and video as well. So to have those memories.
You make your way back into Galveston. How was the debark process? And is Carnival using that new digital debark? And how exactly does that work if they are?
Yeah. So debarkation overall was very smooth. Yes, the hub app is active to do that. Pretty much after like the first or second day, you can just move over to your debarkation day, and then you just choose. You have an option. You get to choose: do I want to do self assist or do I want to do check luggage? And then if you do the check luggage, then it will give you an option to say what time do you want to have your debarkation, like what time do you want to do your debarkation to start. And so I did that not knowing that we really didn't need to, because I went to guest service desk later for something else. And I asked them that question because I wanted to change it from, I can't remember if I went, like basically change the option. And they're like, oh, don't worry about it, because for Platinum and Diamonds, essentially, you don't need to do anything with the hub app. You can just, we'll send you a letter to your cabin. You just meet at the Jubilee Theater, either 7:30 or 8:30 in the morning, that debarkation day, depending if you want to do self-assist or check luggage. And you basically just, that's the time that you're going to, and then you just, walk off then. So that's what we did. We had breakfast in the main dining room that morning. And a few minutes before, we did the check luggage option. So 8:30 we're supposed to meet. Around 8:20 I was starting to head over there to the Jubilee Theater, and pretty much saw a line of the folks leaving, coming off of the Jubilee Theater, walking out early, essentially, that they did debarkation early. So I just joined the line and left. Overall, it took us, I think it was like 30 minutes from the moment we left the main dining room breakfast to being in our car. So it's pretty efficient.
Throughout your sailing, did you, like, if you were grabbing coffee at the Java Blue Cafe or grabbing something from the bar, whatever it is you grab, did you notice like any kind of long lines or long waits, or were things pretty efficient?
Fairly efficient. Sometimes you do see maybe, five or six people. It depends on what's going on around that area at the time. So for example, that Java Blue Cafe is right in front of the center stage. So if it's in the evening time and there's a show about to start, and the typical lines will be a little bit longer. But in general, it wasn't really too bad. I mean, it wasn't the, hey, I'm right there and you immediately get served. But at the same time, it wasn't a good, 30 plus minute wait either.
Any first time tips to offer someone who might be sailing Carnival Jubilee or heading to the Western Caribbean for the first time?
Yeah, so some first time tips. One is, I highly recommend, even though if you typically do early dining or late dining, I would just recommend you do the your time dining for these Excel class ships, including the Jubilee, because it just opens up the option to do the free restaurants like Cucina, Shebang, the guys, Big and Anchor, at any time during dinner and not after a certain time if you do the early dining, for example. Another one for Bolt, if you do want to ride it, I would highly recommend you book it on one of first days of your sailing instead of waiting, because it does get canceled a lot in case it's windy or rainy or whatever reason, then they'll shut it down. So if you basically book it for one of the last nights, you may not end up going at all. Oh, speaking of Bolt, so when you do book it and so on board, obviously, since you can't book it in advance, you get a 30-minute window. And so to somewhat avoid the line, because I did see people hanging out, basically like forming a line or whatever, hanging out right outside of Bolt. So then when their time opens, they would go. So we ended up going about 20 to 25 minutes in within our 30-minute window. And there was literally nobody. Like, we just walked right on and hopped, got on, did the Bolt. And then they even honestly just gave us a second free spin because there was nobody in the line before the next 30-minute slot started. Not to say that that's a guarantee anyone is going to get that, but we just got lucky, obviously, but just to kind of avoid the line there.
What was the biggest highlight for y'all?
Honestly, just spending time with my son. He's just so fun and full of character and adventurous like me. He's just had a blast together. And then I also just meeting some of the crew and the staff. They recognized us and me like from past sailings, and it was nice to kind of meet up with them again and say hi and catch up. It was just an overall great experience.
For parking in Galveston, do you normally use like the dedicated lot, or do you go to like an offsite lot?
I bounce back and forth. Galveston Park and Cruise, I've parked there. I usually like to pick something where I don't want to take a shuttle. Mm-hmm. I don't want to rely on a shuttle, especially coming back. So Galveston Park and Cruise, you can pretty much just walk. This time we parked in, I think it's called SMP Garage, which is just literally right across the street as well. And it's a covered, garage, like a covered garage, obviously. So that was happy with that choice.
I think on turn days, that Starbucks right there on the corner is probably the busiest Starbucks in Texas.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
It's crazy. Well, in closing here, your final thoughts of Carnival Jubilee.
It's a beautiful ship. I would recommend it. Super friendly crew on there. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
Been talking with Bahar about his 7-night Western Caribbean cruise aboard Carnival Jubilee. Always good talking to you, my friend.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy.
Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.